Okay, we begin here on the top of Chav Bet Amud Aleph by the two dots. Gemara says, Atzitz shelachad vizraim mishelacher. In the case where you have a pot that belongs to one individual, and the plants that are inside of it, whatever is growing inside of it, belongs to the other individual. Now, as Tosfot points out, it's unnecessary to have it be that the pot is owned by one person and the vegetation is owned by the other individual, but they're trying to emphasize the difference between the two items over here, especially given that you own one of the items and you're trying to acquire the other item. So just because of that nature, they set up the case this way, but it wasn't necessary to set up this case. You could have come to the same conclusions even if they were owned by one individual. So now we assume that the pot here is atzit nakuv, that has a hole in it, and therefore anything that is growing in it is considered mechuber lekarka, attached to the ground. Machar bala atzitz, the bala zraim, if the owner of the pot sold the planter to the individual who owns whatever vegetation is inside, kevin shemashach kana. As soon as he does a kinyan mishicha, he's koneh, because as Rashi notes over here, the atzitz habi talush, the pot itself is considered to be talush or metaltalim, even though that which is inside of it is considered to be mechubar the karka. So even though the vegetation that's inside of it is growing and there's a hole in there and has a din of mechubar the karka, the planter itself is considered to be metaltalin, and therefore you would use a kinyan that is appropriate for metaltalin. Obviously, it's a case where he didn't give money or didn't pay for it at this point, because otherwise then you have other issues in terms of the kinyan kesef and a machloket with regards to kinyan kesef by metaltalin. The same will be true in the reverse when they try to buy the zraim inside. Also over there, there was no money exchanged, because otherwise then we wouldn't need another kinyan with regards to karka. So Rashi describes it as being, you have metaltalim and you have item that is mechuber the karka. The individual who owned the metaltalim aspect of it, the non-real property, the planter, sold it, and they made a kinyan in it through a kinyan mishicha, which is a proper kinyan for metaltalin, and therefore it's fine and it works. There are those that disagree with Rashi in terms of the status of the planter here as to whether it's considered mechuber the karka or not, and for what halachot it has that din. Rashi just says across the board, atzitz habitalush. So just know that there are other rishonim that have a slightly different view of it, but in the end, with regards to kinyan, they all agree that it's considered to be like metaltalin. Machar bala zraim le bala tzitz. On the other hand, if the one who owned the vegetation inside of the planter sold it to the owner of the planter, lo kana achi yachzik bizraim, he's not koneh it until he does a chazakah on the zraim. So you have here a problem, which is that the zraim themselves are considered mechubar the karka. Karka is only niknait in one of three ways: kesef, shtar, and chazakah. We already indicated there was no kesef over here, because again, otherwise then the case would not be necessary, because as soon as you have the kesef exchange, you would have acquired the vegetation that's there. We assume there's no shtar, so he's using the last vehicle that you can use for acquisition of real property, which is chazakah. So if he just simply picks up the planter or removes the vegetation, that won't help him, because that's a kinyan that only works for metaltalim. It's not a kinyan that works for real property. So over here, he has to use a kinyan that works for real property, and he uses chazakah. Chazakah over here is demonstrable ownership. That is, either by doing work on it, changing it in some way. In a larger field, in the Gemara in Baba Batra talks about gadar paratz, that he puts up a fence, he breaks down a fence, he changes something about the dynamics of the field that demonstrate his ownership over the field. He would have to do something of a similar nature over here in terms of the zraim. Atzitz v'zraim shel echad. If the pot and the zraim belong to a single individual, umacharan la'acher, and then he sells it to a third party, hechzik bizraim kana atzitz. If he does a chazakah on the zraim, then he's also koneh the planter along with it. Zohi shishaninu, this is the Mishnah in Kiddushin that tells us, nechasim she'en lehem achrayut, when you have property that is non-real property, niknim in nechasim she'esh lehem achrayut, are acquired along with real property, bekesef ubishtar ubechazakah. This is otherwise known as kinyan agav. Kinyan agav is that when you do a kinyan on real property, we would look at a kinyan or the purchase of real property as being a higher level of acquisition. That can drag along with it, agav. Since you're already making a kinyan on the property, everything on the property comes along with it. So for instance, if you're purchasing a property, and items on the property. Once you've done a chazak or done something to acquire the property, all the items on the property come along with it, even though you didn't make a direct kinyan on them. And even though this kinyan would not suffice for them individually because they are metaltel and they're non-real property. But agav, the real property, they come along. So to over here, with the zra'im, which are considered mechubar lekarga, if you make a chazakah, you acquire them through chazakah over here, then it pulls the planter along, even though the planter is deemed to be metaltelim, and it wouldn't have been a sufficient kinyan for it. So as long as you've done something to acquire the zra'im, you've also acquired the planter along with it. Tosfot over here asks, if you're using a kinyan agav, do you have to actually articulate that you're using a kinyan agav? And Tosfot says, you have to say, agav uknei, you're functionally using a kinyan agav to acquire the metaltelim, or is that the default over here? Normally you would have to do it because whatever item is on the real property doesn't necessarily belong there or is attached to it. Over here, the planter and the zra'im are a single unit. And therefore, maybe you would not have to articulate the fact that when you acquire the zra'im, you're also taking the planter because right now they're a single unit. So Tosfot leaves it be tzarech iyun as to whether maybe over here, even without articulation, the kinyan agav would work. Hechzik ba'atzitz, af atzitz lo kana. If he pulls up the atzitz or does something with the atzitz, with the planter, not only does he not acquire the zra'im, he doesn't acquire the planter as well. Because he's trying to use a method of acquisition that doesn't work for an atzitz. Atzitz is metaltelin. A chazaka over there doesn't work in terms of metaltelin. Ad sheyachzik bizraim. The only way that he can acquire this and pull the planter along is if he does a chazaka with the zraim. So obviously, if he did a kinyan mishicha here on the planter, he would acquire the planter. It would not help him for the zraim necessarily, but would help him for the planter. But here he uses a method of acquisition that's only used for mural property, and he's trying to do this with metaltelim. He's trying to do it with the atzitz, with the planter. That doesn't work. So not only does it fail for the zra'im, it also fails for the atzitz itself, or the planter itself. Nakavo ba'aretz v'nofo b'chutz la'aretz. This is a sugya that pops up a number of times in Shas. It's here, it's in the Gemara in Makot, and it appears in Baba Batra as well. If it has a planter where the hole or the attachment to the ground is inside of Eretz Yisrael, v'nofo b'chutz la'aretz, but its branches or the tree itself is hanging over the border and is in chutz la'aretz, what is the status of this tree? Bayamar batar nakvo azlina. We go after the hole. We go after where it's drawing its nourishment from. And it's drawing its nourishment from the land of Israel, and therefore it's deemed to be a tree of the land of Israel. Obviously, this has nafkaminot in terms of mitzvot atluyot baretz. Are you chayvim aser? Are you chayvim bikurim? Are you chayvim truma? All of these would be impacted by this. Rav Amar batar nofo azlinen. Rav says we go after where the tree exists. Where are the branches of the tree? Where is the trunk of the tree? That is sitting outside of Eretz Yisrael, and therefore the tree is considered to be a chutz laretz tree. Now the Gemara makes a statement. Bidda ashrosh kule amalo plige. If it rooted, then nobody has any questions. As Rashi notes over here, what does it mean? Bidda ashrosh is chutz lanekev. Meaning that the roots penetrated outside of that hole. And therefore, not only is it drawing nourishment from that hole that attaches it to the ground in Eretz Yisrael, the roots themselves have now rooted into the land of Israel outside of this planter that it is sitting in. And as Tosfot points out over here, all of this is true in the reverse as well. And this is not unique to Eretz Yisrael. If the pot was on the outside, in Chutz La'aretz, it had a hole in it, and all of the branches were hanging into Eretz Yisrael, you would have the same question in the reverse. Over here, the question revolves around the yinika, or the nourishment that it draws when it's not deeply rooted in the land. If it was deeply rooted in the land, means so much so that it already extended through the hole into the ground, there we don't have a question that everybody agrees that it's considered to be ba'ashrosh, that wherever it takes root, that is considered to be the location of the item. The question here is because it's inside of a planter, it has a hole in the planter, which we have said makes it mechubar lekarga, so now it's connected to the ground, but it's effectively connected to the ground because of the hole, which allows for the free flow of nutrients or nourishment to move between the pot and the ground. But the roots are still inside the planter. So they haven't exited the planter. They haven't actually rooted in the ground of Eretz Yisrael. So ki plige b'dol ashush. The Gemara says, "Uk d'ashush lo plige." Wait a minute. Is that really true? When it's rooted, there is no machloket over here. Vatanan. Don't we have a mishnah that discusses this? Vatanan. Shteginot zo agabzo. You have two gardens, one higher than the other. So you have a tiered setup. Happens here in Israel all the time, where you are building along the side of a mountain. So you have to tier the sides. You have like trellising. The way it works out is that one person's field is higher than the other person's field. And then you have a wall that sits between them, a retaining wall that sits between them. Here, they don't have a retaining wall. It's simply earth that is between them. And so now that ground that is between them, who does that belong to? Does it belong to the upper field? Or does it belong to the lower field? What happened? V'yerek bentayim. Vegetation started to grow out of that wall. That wall that separates between the upper field and the lower field, vegetation starts to appear there. Who is the owner of that? So Rav Meir omer, shel oyon. It belongs to the upper field. Rav Yehuda omer, shel tachton. And Rav Yehuda says it belongs to the lower field. So over here, seemingly, we have a machloket about what is the determination of a vegetation that has taken root in the ground that clearly belongs to the upper level, because that is the raised part, but its leaves, its branches, or whatever is extending out, are hanging over the field of the lower owner. So here, the Gemara wants to use that as a proof that here we have a machloket, even when it comes to b'dash rosh, when it's rooted. Here it's rooted in the upper individual's land, but it is hanging over the lower individual's land, and here we have machloket, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir. The Gemara says, hatam kidetani taimo. Over there, the reason is given. It has nothing to do with our case. It's specific to that case, which is, Amar Rabbi Meir, ma im yirtze elyon litolet afaro, ein kan yerek. If he wants to go and take all of his dirt away, there is no yerek. Meaning that when you have two layers, the upper layer and the upper layer can excavate down to the lower layer. He can make his field at the same level as the field below him by simply removing all the earth that is there in his field. He can take it all out. If he takes it all out, that wall that is facing the lower field won't exist anymore. So it's clear that the vegetation belongs to him. I'm Rabbi Yehuda. You can do just the opposite. Ma im yirtze atachton lemalot et ginato afar. If the lower field wants to landfill, he could build a retaining wall on the other side, fill the whole thing with earth, and be on the same level as the upper field. And then if he does that, in Kanyarek, there'll no longer be a wall. So their argument is about not whether about the rooting or not rooting, but very clearly their argument is about who really owns the wall because of who really controls that area. Is the air controlled by the upper field because he can take away the earth? Or is it controlled by the lower field because he can fill it in and take away that wall? Who really controls the wall? And that's their machloket. Nothing to do with whether rooting or where the vegetation is hanging. Has nothing to do with our machloket. It's a completely different machloket. Now, Tosafot already asked the question. The Mishnah is explicit. I mean, the Mishnah has an argument between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda, and then right afterwards explains their machloket. Here the Gemara, or the questioner over here, said, oh, maybe Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Meir are arguing about the rooting versus where the leaves are, where the branches are. How could you ever say that? The Mishnah just keeps going and explains Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's position. The answer is so easy or so straightforward, then how did he even question it? So Tosfot over here, you can see him, the Asher Shlo Pligi, says, Kasaka Datcha, Ta'adik Tani Seifa, Amar Rabbi Meir. We would have thought that when it says Amar Rabbi Meir in the second half of the Mishnah, Ma'im Yitzer Yom, Sheinze Ikar Atam. We would have thought that wasn't his main reason. He was just in the middle of the argument, so he argued with Rabbi Yehuda on Rabbi Yehuda's terms, which is, oh, you want to talk about taking away dirt, filling in dirt? I can speak in those terms as well. But that's not my real reason. My real reason is because of the rooting versus the branches. So Tosfos speculates that that's what the questioner was thinking. Again, it's still very difficult to understand why he questioned it based on the fact that Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning is given explicitly in the Mishnah. And Tosfos even says later on, V'tema d'lomaiti achami orla, that here the Gemara doesn't bring from Orla, where also we have a similar machloket with a tree that is hanging on the border. Again, there are other places in Shas where we have this idea of a tree being on a border as to which side it belongs on. And the Gemara here doesn't bring many of those, which is interesting. But the bigger issue is why they brought the case they did from Baba Metzia, which seems not to be relevant at all. Tosfos tries to eliminate the problem by simply saying that we thought it wasn't the main reasoning for him. Other Rishonim have a much harder time with it and aren't as easily persuaded as Tosfos that you could really get around the problem of this Mishnah. Mar says, Bakati bidorash rosh lo plige. You're telling me that when it roots, they don't argue? Vatanya, we have a braita. Ilano miksato ba'aretz u'miksato b'chutz la'aretz. So here you have a tree that's partially in Eretz Yisrael, partially in Chutz La'aretz. Tevel v'chulim mu'ravin ze b'ze divrei Rabbi. Rabbi says you have a problem here. You have a tree that has a mixture in it. Half of the tree belongs in Chutz La'aretz, half of it's in Eretz Yisrael. You now have a tree that's a confused tree in a sense, but a tree that everything that you take off of it is a mixture of chulin, because of Chutz La'aretz, and a mixture of Tevel because of Eretz Yisrael. The nafkamina will be that you can't take off Chumot u'Masrot on it from something else or on something else because the nature is different. You'd have to use the tree itself because everything you take out of the tree should have the same percentage of mixture. So whatever you remove from the tree will have the same properties as the tree itself. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, Hagadel b'chiyuv chayav, Hagadel b'patur, patur. Along your suggestion, whatever's growing on the side that is chayav, meaning in Eretz Yisrael, would be chayav. Anything that's growing on the outside, meaning in Chutz La'aretz, is patur. My love, what is the scenario there in that Mishnah Baba Batra? Mitzat nofo ba'aretz, u'mitzat nofo b'chutz la'aretz. Well, let's assume here that the case there is a case where the tree itself, half the branches are in Eretz Yisrael, half the branches are in Chutz La'aretz, and that's their machloket. What happens in that scenario? It says, lo, mixat shorashim ba'aretz, u'mixat shorashim b'chutz la'aretz. No, the case there is not about when the branches are on either side. The question here is when the roots are on either side. So my time of the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, according to that, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position is much harder to understand. Because if the roots do extend both into Eretz Yisrael and to Chutz La'aretz, then Rabbi's position makes a lot of sense, which is here you have a mixture. You have a mixture between nourishment that is drawn from Eretz Yisrael, nourishment that is drawn from Chutz La'aretz, and then the product of that tree is really a product of a mixture of Chutz La'aretz and Eretz Yisrael, and you really have Mu'aravim. How could Rabbi Shimon Gamliel then say, tree's divided. Half of it is Eretz Yisrael, half of it's Chutz La'aretz. How does he divide the tree that way? So he answers, the mafsik tsunama, that there is, I call it, whether it's bedrock or something solid in between. The tree is straddling bedrock or straddling something that divides the rooting of the tree. In doing so, there are roots in Eretz Yisrael. There are roots in Chutz La'aretz. Those roots are completely separate. They don't overlap. You don't have roots going one way and turning the other way. Whatever goes to Eretz Yisrael goes to Eretz Yisrael. Whatever goes to Chutz La'aretz, Chutz La'aretz. What he assumes then is, the same way that the roots are divided, so too is the tree divided. Meaning any nourishment that's pulled up from the side of Eretz Yisrael stays on that side of the tree. And every nourishment that's pulled by the roots in Chutz La'aretz stays on that side of the tree. Meaning that once it reaches the trunk, that division still remains. It does not get mixed together, and each side remains independent. My time of the Rabbi. Rabbi says, the Behadre Arvik. They mix up again when they reach the trunk, meaning that they're drawing nourishment from either side, but that does not remain independent. Once you reach the trunk and the branches, that mixes together to give the tree the nourishment it needs. And once it's mixed inside, you can't discern between what's Eretz Yisrael and Chutz La'aretz. So, b'mai kamiflege. So what are they arguing about? Mar savar avira mibalbel. Mar savar aluchudekai. So they argue about exactly this point as to once it comes out of the ground into the trunk of the tree or into the branches of the tree, how separate does it remain? Meaning, do the roots determine which nutrients stay on which side of the tree? Or do the roots just simply bring whatever the tree needs to the central part? Once it's out of the ground, then it mixes within the tree and you cannot make such a fine distinction between what's on this side and that side. And that's a machloka between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel in the Mishnah in Baba Batra. So we suggested before that Rabbi and Rava were arguing when we have a pot that has a hole in it, that they argue about this issue. But bida ashrush, when it roots, kuli amalo plige. Nobody disagrees. So over here, now from the Mishnah in Baba Batra, that becomes clear that nobody disagrees. If the rooting takes place in a single location, everybody agrees that the tree belongs to that location. You can see that from Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. They both agreed that if the rooting was in one place, the rooting would be the determining factor. Their machloket is determined by the fact that the roots are split between Eretz Yisrael and Chutz Laaretz, and therefore they argue about what happens within the tree afterwards. But had all the roots been on one side, everybody would agree that the tree belongs to whichever side it rooted on. So that's the proof that we bring over here to the fact that v'da'ashrush lo plige, they don't argue in rooting, because even though we brought a machloket here between Rabbi and Rabbi Shimon Galon, which seemingly is arguing about rooting, in the end it's not true. They agree in the rooting part of it. They just disagree with what happens when the roots are split or moved between different locations. They're not arguing about the nof. They're not arguing about whether the branches are on one side, and one of them is saying it's by the roots, one of them is saying by the branches. Everybody agrees that it's determined by the roots. Question is, when the roots go in a certain direction, how does that impact the upper part of the tree? And therefore, Abaye and Rava, or what we said before is true, but the ashrush lo kumul ame lo pligi, if it roots into the ground, we know where it belongs to. Here the question is, because it remains in the planter, and there's only a hole in it, and now the remainder of the tree is hanging over, there we have some uncertainty, and that's the uncertainty that Abaye and Rava raises, where the hole in the ground belongs to one side, but the tree itself, or whatever is in this planter, is hanging over the other side, which is koveya. Is it the hole in the planter that's koveya, or is it the tree itself that is koveya in that instance?
There
are three different types of leathers, hides, matzah, chipa, and diphtera. Obviously, the one that's of interest to us is the diphtera, because in the Mishnah, it mentioned that Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteiro Omer, ain kotvim lo ala niyar hamachuk v'lo ala diphtera. It says over there that you can't use paper that is erased, and you can't use diphtera. What is the diphtera? So we mentioned in the Mishnah, it's a type of leather, it's a hide that is prepared. Here we have from Rabbi Chiya Bas Mishmeid Ula a definition of diphtera based on his laying out here of these different items. Matzah kimashma'o. It's like matzah, it like, sounds like what it is, matzah. What's matzah? As Rashi notes over here, matzah is something that you don't do any preparation to. You don't allow it to rise. You don't give it any time. You simply take it as it is. Or you could say simply that it has no ingredients in it. It's the very basics. I mean, just like matzah is just water and flour, over here we're just dealing with leather without any other ingredients that are added. And that's what this is. Delo meliach, delo kmiach, v'delo afit. There's no tanning of the leather, no treatment of the leather, not in salt, not in flour, and not in galls. So none of that is done to the leather. So then that type of leather is called matzah, the mahilchata. Why are you segregating this, or why are you telling us about this unique type of leather? It might be interesting to tanners or to leather makers, but why is it interesting to us? The answer is, because it has halachic ramifications, which is lotzat Shabbat. It has implications for taking out on Shabbat. Kamashi uro. How much you have to carry of this hide to be chayav on Shabbat? Kedetani Rav Shmuel Bar Yehuda, kedei latzor mishkal ktana. In order to wrap up a small weight inside of it. Vikama, what is a small weight that we're speaking about here? Amar Baya, keriva deriva de pumpadita. The weight, the 1/16th weight of pumpadita, which is the smallest weight that they had, their weights were made out of metal or out of lead. In order to preserve them from losing their efficacy as a weight, you had to wrap them, because otherwise what would happen over time is you'd lose the accuracy of the weight because it would get rubbed down and it would lose some of its weight. So they used to wrap the weights in leather in order to protect them until they used them, and after they used them, they put them back in the leather. So this type of leather, this matzah, was good for that type of usage, which is to wrap it up. Therefore, on Shabbat, the amount of leather you would have to carry out to be chayav in Shabbat would be the amount that you would use to wrap a weight, because that would be the smallest amount you would use it for, or functionally, that would be useful, and therefore, if you carry that amount on Shabbat, you'd be chayav. Chipa, this type of leather of chipa is de meliach, velo kumiach. It is salted, but not flour, velo afitz, and not galls. Meaning that it is tanned, or it is treated with salt, but it's not treated with flour or afitz. So you've begun the process of treatment, but it hasn't fully gone through the treatment. There it's called chipa, the mai hilchata, once again. Again, this is interesting to leather makers. Why is it interesting to us? Lotzat Shabbat. Once again, to know how much you have to carry on Shabbat to be chayav. Bekama shiuro. How much you have to carry? Kedetnan, the Mishnah in Shabbat tells us. Or kedei lasot kemeya. That the amount of leather you have to take out is the amount to make an amulet. Rashi over here describes the making of an amulet is not writing the amulet on this, but rather wrapping the amulet. It is the case or the cover for the amulet, and that's what they're speaking about here. From Tosafot, it sounds otherwise. Tosafot seems to say that it is lasot kmiya, to make an amulet, which makes it sound like it's the writing of an amulet, that you might write an amulet on this. So, obviously, that would have different implications as to what exactly the size is. So Rashi talks about a cover for an amulet. Tosafot speaks about an amulet itself, seemingly the writing of an amulet on that piece of leather. Diftera, what's the definition of diftera? Demaliach v'kamiach, it's treated with salt and flour, v'lo'afitz, but it's not treated with the galls. V'mai hilchata, again, what's the halacha? Lotzat Shabbat, again, for taking out in Shabbat, what size do you need? V'kama shi'ro, what is the minimum size of diftera to be considered lotzat in Shabbat? In order to write the get on this. Now, obviously, this does not accord with the position of Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira. This is according to the Shita of the Chachamim, who say you're allowed to write on diftera for a get. Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira says you're not allowed to write on diftera. So this discussion here amongst the Amoraim, discussing these three orot, is discussing it within the position of the Chachamim, saying that according to the Chachamim who can write on diptera, then the minimum size of diptera is a get, because that's what you would use diptera for, is to write a get on it. Rashi here then makes a comment afterwards, which is, umiu klaf gamur. What is real klaf then? Demaliach, vikamiach, va'ofitz. All three of those items, meaning you treat it with all of the items, which is salt, flour, and the galls. Loshmei or. It's no longer called leather. What Rashi says is the reason that these three items made it into the list here is because they're still called leather. Klaf is called parchment, not leather anymore. I mean, it's changed its status, and therefore it's not in this list. And that's why it's left out. And as Rashi says, v'shi'urei, that shi'ur is mentioned also in the Mishnah in Shabbat, klaf kedei lichtov bo parshak tana shebitfilin, that the minimum shi'ur of a klaf is to write the smallest parsha of a tefillin. And so it's left out of the list because of this. Tosfot over here says that that's not necessarily the case. He says, "Vodo meri delo mani badayu klaf mishum dehedja tnan shi'uro kedei tichtob pashak tanav shvitvilin." So he says the reason that klaf was left out of the list is not necessarily because of what Rashi says, because it's not considered to be leather, but rather because that was a known shi'ur in carrying on Shabbat. You have an explicit mishnah that tells you what the shi'ur is for klaf. So an Amora doesn't have to come and tell you that information about klaf. So the Amora here is filling in the pieces of the puzzle that are missing, which are these three types of leather, where the Mishnah does not directly address them. Klaf is already addressed by the Mishnah. The truth is that we just quoted a Mishnah, Afagav Deshir Chipa Davik De La Sot Kmiya is a Mishnah. So how come there we don't leave it out of the list? Shenu Benishim Mekom Kom Lo Yizkir Chipa Behedja Bematzniten. The Mishnah doesn't explicitly mention what type of leather it is. With regards to klaf, the Mishnah specifically says, a klaf, the minimum shiur is the smallest parsha on tefillin. So over there, there's nothing for us to add. In the case of kmiya, it just says leather. It doesn't tell you what type of leather. So what Tosafot assumes over here is that the Amora would be additive, not repetitive. And if he's additive, he's got to be telling us something that's not in the Mishnah. So the reason klaf is left out is because we have all the information we need to know about klaf. We know that it's klaf. And we know that it's parsha shebitfilin. The other items, either they're not mentioned in the Mishnah at all, the size of leather that it's carrying, or even if they're mentioned in the Mishnah, it doesn't tell you what type of leather is subject to that shiur. It just says leather, and so the Amoraim here are clarifying that issue for you, and that's why it's left out. Not what Rashi says here, that the klaf is separate or segregated from these, because it's no longer called or. Maybe it is called or, but we don't need that information here. So now, the Gemara continues here with Hachamim Machshirim. The Chachamim over here say that you can use diftera. Yehuda ben Beteira's claim is a good claim, which is that if you can change the information on the get, then why should you be able to use it? It should be automatically pasul, because then someone after the fact could go and change the information in the get and make it look like that was what was written there all along. You have signatories to the get, and now it looks like you have a perfectly good get. So Rabbi Yehuda ben Beteira's claim is very strong. What is the Chachamim's position over here that they say that it's fine? So that's what the Gemara says here. Chachamim Makshirim, Man Chachamim. Who are these Chachamim? Amar Rabbi Elazar. Now here this is Rabbi Elazar the Amora, who is a Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, who lives in Eretz Yisrael, Talmid Chover of Rabbi Yochanan. So the Amora, Amar Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar he. It is Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Elazar the Tana. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah, the Amar Ede Misire Karte, that says that the conclusion of a get or the kritut a get is created by the Ede Misira. V'amar Rabbi Elazar. So now Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, the Amora says, Lo Hekshir Rabbi Elazar, the Tana Rabbi Elazar, was only Makshir El Alter. If there was something said about it immediately. Alva Mikan, V'yada Sariyamim, Lo. But if it was here today, and then we're dealing with it 10 days later, we don't. Chashinan, we worry about the fact, Dumahava Bei Tana'a, maybe there was a condition in it, V'zaifte, and he somehow changed it or erased it. So Rabbi Elazar agrees that we do have suspicions about what happens in such a get because it can be changed. But that's only in situations where there's a gap in time between the get itself, the giving of the get, and its, let's call its validation in Beit Din or till it's brought forth in Beit Din. If immediately it's brought forth in Beit Din after you have the Ede Misira, we don't worry about the fact that there might be some sort of cheating or changing of the get because the Ede Misira are there. On the other hand, 10 days later, when they come to Beit Din, even though the Ede Misira are there, we start to worry about their memories or what they remember exactly about the get, and they're going to start to forget what happened in the get. But Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Ramar, afil mikan vada sara yamim. Says even up to 10 days. I mean, 10 days is just an example. It doesn't mean 10 days. Dimita d'ava beitnai midkar dekire. That the Ede Misira would remember if there was something in there that was a condition or there was some information that they need to know, they would remember the information. We have a number of factors here that are working. You have Rabbi Elazar's Shita, which is Ede Misira Karte. So since Ede Misira Karte, we're not necessarily relying on the get itself, we're relying on the Ede Misira that were there. The Ede Misira, as we saw before in the Gemara, have to read the get. In order for them to be Edim on the get, they must read the get prior to being the Ede Misira, and therefore they know what's inside of the get. So now, once they've read the get, they know the contents of the get. At that point, we have a machok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Elazar, the student of Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, and Rabbi Yochanan about whether we trust the Edim to remember everything that's written in the get. Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat says, look, we trust them that they know what was in the get, the major content of the get, who's getting divorced, when it would divorce happen. We don't trust them to remember necessarily that there was this condition, that condition that was written into the get. That we don't trust them. So if it comes up immediately, and they're going to Beit Din to validate it, and they want to know what was written in the get, the Ede Misira will tell us. They just read it. They can tell us what's there. Once there's some sort of delay, then we don't trust their memory anymore with regards to sidebars to the get. I mean, not the major content of the get we believe them about, but if once there's a Tanaim, and now you can start changing what's in the get, there's a risk that if you bring in the get with some new information or missing some information, the Ede Misira will say, I don't know, we don't remember that. Rabbi Yochanan says, no, even with regards to Tanaim or basic conditions that are put into a get, Edim remember. When they see a get, they know what the get is about. Now, as Rashi notes over here, Aval the Rabbi Meir, why do we have to say this is all according to Rabbi Elazar and not according to Rabbi Meir? Because Aval the Rabbi Meir is Amar, Lo Be'inan Ede Misira, that you don't require Ede Misira, Ika Lamechash Lizyufa. Then you have to worry about cheating over here or forgeries. Because who are we relying on now? We're relying on the signatories to the get. Isha Haba'ali Nasei Beget. When a woman comes with her get to get married, she doesn't bring the Edim that are signed on the get. Im Yesh Makirim Bechatimatam. If there's someone who recognizes their signatures, we just need a validation of the signatures. We do not need the actual signatories to come up to the Beit Din. But then the Rashi said the big risk. I mean that the Edim who originally signed on the document are not necessarily present. So if they're not present, then there's nobody to counter what the woman is bringing in front of us or to say to us, what's here is not what we signed on. All we have is the signatories. We have people validating their signatures and we say, good get. So Rashi says the problem for Rabbi Meir is that we are relying on the fact that this is a signed document, and then basically you have the signatures in place, and you can play with anything above the signatures, and nobody will ever know. Whereas according to Rabbi Elazar, where you're relying on the Ede Misira, the only way that you can get validation is to bring the Ede Misira there. And then the machlok between Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Elazar is, how much do the Ede Misira remember? But you have to bring the Ede Misira in order to validate or for the woman to get permission to use this get if she's bringing it after the get was created. And therefore, we have a counter to what the woman is presenting because you have Edim there who were there at the time that the get was given, and they read the get because otherwise they can't be Edim. They have to read the get in order to be Edim here. Rashi over here says that the woman has to produce the Edei Mesira. That's difficult because even Rabbi Elazar the Tana agrees that we have signatories to a get. Why do we have that? That's going to come up later on in the Masechta as Mipnei Tikkun Olam. Because the Edei Mesira are not always available. The woman can't always bring the Edei Mesira to Beit Din. So we rely on the Edei Chatima back up that a Mesira took place. And so even according to Rabbi Elazar, Edei Chatima become important. Now, if Rashi says here that anytime the woman wants to validate the get in Beit Din, she's got to bring the Edei Mesira, then what value do you have in having signatories on the get for Rabbi Elazar? So Tosfot over here qualifies Rashi's statement and says, "V'davka hocha davar sheyochol yisda'ef," omer Rashi. Rashi only says this, that you must bring the Edei Mesira on a get that can be changed. "D'tzricha Edei Mesira b'shat shabat li'inasei." Aval b'gitin ha'ktuvim b'davar she'eno chol yisda'ef. If the get is written on something that cannot be forged, cannot change what's documented in the get, then even according to Rabbi Elazar the Tana, you could get married based on the signatories, because that's the Tikkun Olam. The Tikkun Olam is that the signatories will help you with regards to the Misira, or the Edei Misira, because the Edei Misira are not around. So the demand here for Edei Misira is unique to the circumstance that the paper upon which, or the parchment upon which the get is written, has risks of forgery. And because of that risk, we demand Edei Mesira. But otherwise, first of all, Edei Chatima would suffice, both according to Rabbi Meir, of course, but even according to Rabbi Elazar, who says that Edei Chatima, especially according to Tosfot, the Edei Chatima are not koreit. According to the Rif and others, it's clear that you can use Edei Chatima because they're just as good as Edei Mesira. According to the Baal Tosafot, who say that Rabbi Elazar only believes in Edei Mesira, the Edei Chatima here, which are Tikkun Olam, would work as long as there's no risk of cheating. But if there's a risk of cheating, then you got to produce the Edei Mesira. Tosfot asks Shoal's question, which is, what happens if you show up with the Edim according to Rabbi Meir, the Edei Chatima according to Rabbi Meir? So he says, it sounds from Rashi, the exact conclusion that Shoal drew, which is, if the Edei Chatima show up, we are fine. And there's no problem. Tosafot rejects that understanding of Rashi because he says here, Mashma di avisade kamanave kasher, according to Rashi, V.F. Charlemar came. He says you cannot say that in Rabbi Meir Shita. Came to Rabbi Meir bein anshei muchach mitocho. Rabbi Meir's demand is that it has to be self-evident from the get, the information. If you say Edei Chatima Karte, that means that the get itself is what generates the kritut, and the get itself, the document itself, must be its own proof. And so therefore, if you require the Edim to come to testify about their signatures and about what was the content of the get itself is not a karte anymore because you need outside evidence in order to prove it. And therefore he says, "Ubedavar shechol yisdaif ein mochiach mitochol klum." And a document that can be forged, you can't do that. And therefore he says, with regards to Rabbi Meir Shita, even if you show up at the Edim, the get is no good because the integrity of the get is compromised. Because of the fact that it couldn't be changed. And so even if they didn't come along and say, no, this is exactly what was in there, it would not be good enough according to Rabbi Meir. So you have a Machloket Rashi and Tosafot as to whether if the Edei Chatima show up according to Rabbi Meir, is that a good get? Right now, the Gemara makes a next statement, which is, Va'amar Rabbi Elazar. Again, Rabbi Elazar here is the Amora, Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat. Lo hikshir Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, ela b'gitin. This is only true by gitin. Aval b'shar shtarot lo. By other shtarot, that would not be the case. Dichtiv. Because it says, V'natatem b'kli cheres l'man yamdu yamim rabim. Again, we're going to see this numerous times through the Masechta, but that little parshia in Yirmiyahu that describes Yirmiyahu purchasing land in Eretz Yisrael and then putting it away to show that there will be a redemption, that Bnei Yisrael will return to Eretz Yisrael, and he's purchasing property despite everything that's going wrong and everything that they're getting kicked out of the land. So that parshia will serve as a paradigm for contracts. One of the things mentioned there in that little parshia is that you should write a document, then place that document into an earthenware utensil, l'man yamdu yamim rabim, so that it will last for many years, meaning that the document will have permanence to it so that you can pull it out in a couple of years and use it. Today we find them 1,000 years later. Here, they wanted to keep it for the period of the Galut, so that they could pull it out later. Rabbi Yochanan Amar Afilu Bishtarot. So Rabbi Yochanan, his Rebbe, argues on him and says that Rabbi Elazar, the Tana, says this even by Shtarot. Vahaktiv. What about the Pasuk? Laman Yamdu Yamim Rabim. What is he going to do with that Pasuk from Yirmiyahu? Hatam Eitzah Tova Kamashvalan. It's giving you good advice. If you're going to write a contract, you may as well write it so that it lasts, so that it doesn't disappear after a short period of time, that you can pull it out. It's not a demand in the contract itself. It is good advice to someone who contracts, put it on something that will last, so that when the questions come up in the future, you can pull out this contract and you won't have an issue. So now, what Rashi suggests over here is, the truth is that this is only applies, according to Rabbi Elazar, in Gittin. And that is because, the Kevin Shehutra Bebetin, Yesh Zikaron V'kol L'davar. And when it comes to Gittin, the whole point of the get is to bring it to Beit Din, to show it to Beit Din, get it validated, and Beit Din will allow her to then get married or collect her tuba, and it's all over. There's a short duration of time in which everything about the get takes place, which is that you have the get. Once the Gittin or the Geushin take place, then the value of the get, in a sense, the get is meaningless because the action that you wanted took place, which is that you wanted a divorce. The get accomplishes the divorce. After that point in time, you don't need the get. The only reason you would need the get after that as a shtar raya is if it wasn't yet validated and baked in, or later on, you need to collect her tuba. But other than that, most of what takes place with the get is very immediate. And since it's very immediate, once it's been validated and baked in, everybody knows about it. It becomes a public issue. And even if the get is lost, people will have memories as to what was contained within the get. But then, Rashi says, as opposed to that, Shtarot de kaime le guvaina. The purpose of a shtar is for collection. Vidilma lo mafikle ad zman aroch. You're not going to pull out the collection. He lent the money for 3 years, 5 years. So you're not going to pull out this document for 3 or 5 years. Vishkuchu ede misira et adavar. And then the ede misira, I don't know, 3 years ago, 5 years ago, you're asking me to remember what was inside this contract? We can't ask them for that. That's what Rashi describes as the difference between Gittin and Shtarot, which is Gittin have a much more immediate impact, and their usefulness expires very quickly, whereas Shtarot have a longer shelf life or need for shelf life because the transactions usually exist or the need for them exists over a longer period of time. So Rashi seemingly says that it's a practical difference between Gittin and Shtarot. Tosafot says, Uperish Dachuk. He says that's a difficult explanation. Venire del Rabbeinu Yitzchak, the time of Mishum Gzera Takatuvu. The lo machshere b'shtarot afilu la'altar. The binin ra'ui la'mod yamim rabim. What Tosfa points out is that if you had needed the shtar right away, and you could bring the shtar in right away, from Rashi's explanation, it would have been fine. You don't need anything more. If the shtar was a short duration shtar, then according to Rashi's explanation, the shtar should have been fine. Because you don't need it for the long duration. And therefore the Eidim Yisira will remember and everything will be fine. So Rashi doesn't see this as being something fundamental between a shtar and a get, but simply practical, that the get's needed in a short range of time. The shtar is needed over a long range of time. What happens then if you have a shtar that's needed over a short range of time? So according to Rashi, seemingly it should have the same din as get, not the din of a shtar. Tosfot does not like that, and therefore says that the difference here is not a difference in practicality, but a difference in gzerat hakatuv. The pasuk says that a shtar needs to be a long-lasting document, irrespective of when you need the shtar. Doesn't matter if you're going to use the shtar tomorrow, or it doesn't matter if you're going to use the shtar in 5 years from now. The fact that the shtar itself is written on something that does not last invalidates the shtar, irrespective of this fact. But Rashi's worry is that on a long-dated shtar, we're going to rely on the Eidei Chatima, because Eidei Mesira are not around anymore, and then they can play around with the document. But again, the implications of that are, when we're relying on the Eidei Mesira and they're still around, and we're able to ask them, that it wouldn't be a problem with shtar, and Tosafot's unwilling to accept that, because he thinks it's gzeres hakatuv, that shtarot must be long-lasting documents. As Rabbi Yochanan says, that doesn't matter. Now, Tosafot over here says something interesting, and he says, V'yod yesh lamar, t'davka b'gitin kamar Rabbi Yochanan da'ad yasar yamim t'kire. Tosafot says here, Rabbi Yochanan before said that we don't worry about whether the document was brought to light immediately, or it was brought to light even after 10 days. We rely on the Eidei Mesira to relay to us what was inside of this document. Tosafot now says that maybe that's unique to Gittin and not to Shtarot. That Rabbi Yochanan will not disagree on the point of Shtarot. He disagrees fundamentally with Shtarot. He says that even by Shtarot, you can use the Diftara and it would be fine because we have the Eidei Mesira and everything's fine. But Rabbi Yochanan might agree there that the validation might have to take place immediately, rather than after 10 days. What's the difference? He says, Ad asara yamim dechire with gitin. Aval shterot sheyesh rov tnaim lo dechire. V'dafka de'alter machshir. He makes a fundamental difference, which is true today as well, that when you have a get is usually a pretty simple document. It's pretty boilerplate. Even if there's a condition in the get, it's usually one condition or one little thing or two little things that are in the get, and that's it. Whereas when you come to a shtar that documents transactions, there are innumerable si'ifim, different clauses, chapters, and now you're asking the Edim to remember everything, that you're not going to believe that the Edim and Sira are going to remember. And therefore, Tosfot speculates here that maybe Rabbi Yochanan would differentiate between Gittin and Shtarot. So by Gittin, he agrees with Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat, that Rabbi Elazar says Edim and Sira Karate. He disagrees with him and says it can be over a longer period of time, even if we only validate the get later on. But with regards to the Shtarot, even though Edim and Sira Karate, we will only believe the Edim Sira immediately. We will not believe the Edim Sira if you have a document that can be forged or changed. 10 days later, we're not sure we're going to rely on them because you ask them to remember too much information. And they're not going to remember all that information. They're not going to remember something was changed in the document. I mean, documents go through so many changes and so many negotiations that maybe that would not be a reliable way to deal with it. Right, so if the document can't be changed, then you can rely on the Edei Chatima at that point because anything that's changed will be noticeable. And said, this is all about documents that can be changed or forged. That's where the issue is. So then, Tosfot also notes that for Rabbi Elazar, there's a difference between whether you have Edim signed on it or not signed on it. Meaning that if you have a document that cannot be forged, and you do not have Edim on it, there we do worry about the document, because we still don't have anybody who remembers or can tell us or identify for us what was written on the document originally. When you have Edim signed on it, then we know that somebody looked at this, and if there was any change, that it would be discernible because of the fact that they deemed sign on it. Tosfot here brings another speculation, which is possibly, he says that maybe you could differentiate here as well as to what the purpose of the shtar is. If the shtar is an evidence shtar, then all of this should be true because you're looking for something to be of a long duration. If the shtar is functioning like a get, which is it's an immediate activity, which is the shtar is what's creating the kinyan over here, whether it's a gift or whether you're using a shtar to create the kinyan or the sale, then if it's a shtar kiyum, maybe there it should have the same din as a get because it's for immediate use. It's not for keeping it over time. And others said that ain chiluk ben davar sheyachol yisdeif and ain yochol beidei misira l'Rabbi Elazar. That our Gemara is addressing that Rabbi Elazar believes that there's no distinction between a document that can be forged or not forged when you have eidei misira. And then Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat's statement is not that Rabbi Elazar doesn't say it's mutar or it's kasher in all the k'sharot, rather he's paskening and saying that the locha is like Rabbi Elazar b'gitin and not like Rabbi Elazar b'shtarot. And obviously Rabbi Yochanan disagrees. Tosafot does not like that explanation. He says, ve'ein nira, because first of all, he says that will connect to the sugya later on in the Masechet and daf pei vav, and therefore they should have brought that sugya over here as well, or our sugya over there. The fact that the Gemara doesn't overlap them shows you they're not connected, and therefore it's not about the Pesach Halacha, about where we hold like Rabbi Elazar and not hold like Rabbi Elazar, but rather, what is Rabbi Elazar's Shita with regards to these issues between Gittin and Shtarot, as well as the fact that Ratosafot believes that we do Paskin like Rabbi Elazar both by Gittin and by Shtarot, unlike other Rishonim like the Rif, who Paskins only like Rabbi Elazar by Gittin and not by Shtarot, and therefore Ratosafot would not want to set up this sugya here, having Rabbi Elazar ben Pedat saying that the halacha is not like Rabbi Elazar by Shtarot. So Tosafot sees the qualification of Rabbi Elazar the Tana by Rabbi Elazar the Amora here as defining the Shita of Rabbi Elazar the Tana and not as paskening when do we hold like Rabbi Elazar, when do we not hold like Rabbi Elazar, but rather qualifying Rabbi Elazar and explain to us where it's applicable and where it's not applicable, even according to Rabbi Elazar the Tana himself. Right now, the next Mishnah begins. Hakol k'sherim lichtov et a get. Anybody can write a get. Afilu cheresh, shote v'katan. Even people who normally are not equipped or do not have dat to act on behalf of other parties or to be shlichim, to be agents, because they are lacking in some way, Over here, they can write the get. So the Gemara is going to ask the question, what do you mean? How could they write a get if they are not qualified in any way? So the Gemara will discuss that. Haisha kotevet et gita, vaish kotevet shovro, shein kiyum a get, ele b'chut amav. So again, this is the Mishnah we saw quoted earlier. We brought this as a proof, the fact that the woman can write the get and then give it over to her husband, that if she gives the item upon which the get is going to be written on, she gives it with a full kinyan to her husband, and then the husband can give it back as a get. The proof we brought was from here, that the woman can write her own get, then hand it to the husband with a full kinyan, and then the husband will hand it back to her to be a get. And same is true with a man writing the receipt, having paid the ketubah to the woman, then the woman gives him the receipt, he can write the receipt, and then have her hand the receipt back to him, because she ain't kiyum a get, ela b'chotamav. Because the kiyum a get only happens b'chotamav with its signatories. Now again here, whether chotamav means signatories in the real sense, and this is Rabbi Meir, that eide chatima karte, or whether chotamav over here means through its conclusive process, that the get only becomes effective once you have given the get, or you have eide mesira, and it can even be according to Rabbi Elazar.
So even though the Gemara itself is going to assume that this Mishnah is a libo de Rabbi Elazar, and that you need ketiva lishma, nevertheless it uses the term chotamav, either because chotamav means the eide mesira, who are normally the ones that are chotem on the shtar, or chotamav means the completion of the shtar, or completion of the divorce, or even according to Rabbi Elazar, who says eide mesira karte, he also thinks that Eide Chatima can help you out, according to the sheet of the Rif and others. And even according to the sheet of the Tosafot, the Tikkun Olam, the Eide Chatima help over here. Tosafot here brings a possibility that our Mishnah is even according to Rabbi Meir. And therefore, the word Chutamav here is used to reference to Rabbi Meir's view that Eide Chatima karte. But if that's the case, then why do you need Ktiva Lishma? What's the issue with the Cheresh Shotev Katan, who are writing a get that the Gemara seems to indicate need to be lishma? The answer might be that even though Rabbi Meir, the Chatchila Midoraita, believes that you don't need ktiva lishma, nevertheless, midrabanan, midivei sofrim, he might require there be ktiva lishma. And therefore, the question, according to the Gemara, would be, in Rabbi Meir's shita, midrabanan, do we require this type of lishma? Or how high a quality lishma do we require, according to Rabbi Meir? Or, according to the possibility, which the Gemara rejected in the first parak, that Rabbi Meir would require both the ktiva and the chatima to be lishma. And that's the reason that the Gemara is speaking about lishma, even though the Mishnah seemingly is Rabbi Meir, because it says that the get is nikmar b'chutamav. Again, we explained that it could be even according to Rabbi Elazar. But here, Tosafot wants to speculate that even if it was Rabbi Meir, that maybe the Gemara is relevant even within the Shita of Rabbi Meir.
Now the Gemara asks the obvious question that stems from this Mishnah. Bavla b'nei Deyaninu. Chereshotem and Katan do not have the capacity to do what you need them to do here, which is to write the get, Lishma. Amravuna b'hu sheya gadol umeid al gabav. That's only if you have someone who is of age and knows what to be done, standing over them, instructing them what to do. Amalei Rav Nachman, Elami Atov, that's the case. Omeid kochavim b'Yisrael, omeid al gabav, hachinami de kasher. Then you should have the same effect when you have an omeid kochavim who is writing a get, and you have Yisrael standing over him, telling him what to do. Also, that should be kasher. B'chitei ma'ochinami. And if you say yes, yeah, that's the case. V'atanya, omeid kochavim pasul. We see that that's not true. Just because you have someone standing over them does not help you with regards to the dat or the lishma aspect that you need. My answer is, Ovei Kochavim, Lidatei Denafshei Abad. And Ovei Kochavim acts on his own volition. Meaning that he is an independent, he's a bardat, since he's of age, he is an independent thinking individual. And since he's an independent thinking individual, you can say whatever you want to say, but he'll do whatever he wants to do. As opposed to the Chereshotev Katan, who don't, we'll call it quote unquote think independently, they do whatever they're instructed to do. They become almost, in a sense, an extension of whoever is overseeing them, because their dot will match whatever the person who is standing over them tells them. So, hadar amar Rav Nachman, lav milti d'amrei. So, in the end, Rav Nachman says, you know what? What I said is incorrect. Because, demekav pasalei lo ovid kochavim li'inyan hava'a, the psul of an ovid kochavim is that he be a shliach for a get. Michlal li'inyan ktiva kasher. The fact that we only say about an Ovid Kochavim that he is pasul, disqualified from being an agent for a get, That means that's all he's disqualified from, being an agent. But that means that he could write a get and it'd be kosher. And that would be helpful to Rav Huna's position now, because that would corroborate what we're saying. That you can have a cheresh shoteh ketan, and even an ovi kuchavim, if someone stands over them, then they can write the get. Va'atanya ovi kuchavim pasul. Don't you say that an ovi kuchavim is pasul? Hai Rabbi Elazar hi. Damar eide misira karte. That is the sheet of Rabbi Elazar, who says that eide misira karte, ubi'ina ktiva lishma. In the parsha of get, it says v'katov la. Katov la, we learn, means must be lishma. What needs to be lishma is a machlok between Rabbi Elazar and Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Elazar, since the Eide Misira Akarte, the Katov Law is about the writing of the get itself. The writing of the get itself must be lishma. According to Rabbi Meir, the Katov Law is going on the Chatimat HaShtar, that the Edim must sign lishma because they are the ones that are chutein. So for Rabbi Meir, the get itself does not need to be written lishma. So what he says is that bright that says it's pasul is according to Rabbi Elazar. And Rabbi Elazar says you need ktiva lishma, therefore there's a failure. Va'avadai ovei kochavim atatzid in afshei kavad. And over there, I agree that the ovei kochavim acts of his own volition, and therefore you can't generate lishma. And Rav Nachman, omer ha-Rabbi Meir, as Tosfot points out over here, this statement of Rav Nachman is really a statement from before. It's not a new statement of Rav Nachman, but this explains Rav Nachman's shita, that omer ha-Rabbi Meir, afilu mitzao bashpach chatamo v'netano la kasher. The Rabbi Meir says, even if you find a get in the garbage dump, which clearly could be not lishma, was not necessarily written for these individuals, nevertheless, if you pull it out, sign it, and give it, it's good, because the only thing you need lishma is the chasima, is the signatories. So, therefore, Rav Nachman says that when you have an Oved Kuchavim write it, we have one diuk, which is that from further on, he's disqualified from being a shaliach, from being an agent to carry the get, but he's not disqualified from writing the get. That will be the Shitat Rabbi Meir, who says you do not need the ktivat get lishma. On the other hand, Rabbi Elazar, who believes you need a ktivat get lishma, he will say that an Ovid Kochavim is pasul, because even if you have an Yisrael Omid al Gabav, that will not help you out, because adatid nafshei avad. And therefore he does it of his own volition. Now, Tosfot over here discusses this in a couple of ways. Number one is he says, the Tame of the Re, because don't we also need Mila Lishma? That's what we have in another Gemara in Avodah Zarah. And over there, the Gemara says, according to one Tana, that even a non-Jew can perform a Mila. So how come over there we don't say that there's a failure of Lishma? Or even if Yisrael Omeid al Gavav, why don't we say it's not done Lishma? The Re says that there's a difference in the Stam. The default position in these two situations are different. He says, that nafshei aved hainu she'oseh Stam. That he does it without any thought. Gabe get stam lav lishma koi. Again, the default position is not lishma. So therefore you have to activate lishma. So when he does it by default, the Ovid Kochavim, he's not doing anything. On the other hand, stam milah is lishma because you're performing the milah. The fact, mere fact that you're performing the milah is that makes it the default is lishma. And then we would actively have to not do it lishma, which we don't expect from him. We don't expect him when we say adatid nafshei. We say, okay, adatid nafshei means he just doesn't have any thought. He doesn't think about it. That's one thing that Tosfot notes, is that it depends on the default position, whether you need, or the Ovid Kochavim could suffice with a default machshava. The other thing Tosfot deals with is on the previous amud, it's a very large Tosfot. He says that sometimes we seem to say that a gadol omeid al gabav for cheresh shoteh v'katan works. In other places we say it doesn't work. How come over here it works, but in this case it doesn't work? And so what Tosfot says is that it has to do with whether it's called mucha milta, whether it's very clear what they're doing is following the instructions of the gadol. Here by Gittin, it's very clear when the gadol instructions to do a lishma, they're doing the lishma. How do we know? Because they end up writing the name of the person and the name of the woman and the date, meaning that they're following all the instructions. And through their activity, it's very clear that they're doing whatever it is, lishma. On the other hand, in other activities, where you require lishma, you require some sort of makshava, the activity itself doesn't prove whether they've had the makshava or not. The activity itself is neutral, but you have to have makshava. So the gadol says, have the makshava. So, okay, yeah. But how do we know he ever had the makshava? There's nothing that identifies for us the fact that the makshava actually happened. And therefore, those cases, a gadol omeid al gabav will not help us in those instances. The other thing he differentiates between is, don't you need b'nei kritut? Later on, we're going to see this with regards to shlichut. When you have agency, Only a person who is a bnei kritut. That the reason that an agent is a good agent is only because he's subject to kiddushin and gerushin. He's in the world of bnei kritut. If he's not in the world of bnei kritut, then he's not considered a good agent. That's why an obed kuchavim is pasul. Yet over here, the cheres shotev katan, who are not bnei kritut, they are allowed to first of all write the get, and secondarily, it seems to be here they could even be a shliach to give the get. The one possibility is you can say that they're only allowed to write the get, not give it over here. But even if you say that they are considered to be bnei kritut, Tosfot over here says that they might qualify because a katan will become a gadol and become a bnei kritut. A shoteh could become of sound mind again. A cheresh could hear again. There are possibilities of them becoming a bnei kritut, but for the goy, he's not a bnei kritut unless he does a gerut, which makes him into a totally new person. That's one way Tosfot answers it. The second way he answers it is that demand for bnei kritut is only in shlichut. It's only in agency. By ktiva, there is no demand for bnei kritut. The only demand is because of law that it be lishma. That demand for bnei kritut is segregated or only applicable by shlichut, and there every one of these will fail. Kherishotev katan and the goy. By ktiva, it's all about ktiva lishma. There, the kherishotev katan with Israel or a gadol omid al gavav can solve that problem. The goy can't because adate de nafshe avad, and therefore you can't overcome the problem. Okay, we're going to stop here. 13 lines down on the top of Chav Gimel Amad Aleph.